You are listening to the Drew and Jay podcast, brought to you by 21 Media Productions. He is Drew Lasker. I am Jay Marriott. This is episode 21. And do we have a treat for you as we welcome Coach Ryan Smith, former London Lions head coach and current head coach of the Atlanta Hawks G League team, as we discuss the crowning of the league champions. But first, let's catch up with you, Mr. Lasker. How was your weekend?
Yeah, it was good. I'm looking forward to this interview, man. It was, ironically, I spent time in London yesterday doing a Sunday game, which I never get to do because I'm only doing the Sky games. But the production team wanted to acknowledge London winning the league title, which would be the whole point if they didn't. And but the London Lions organization is saving the celebrations for their next home game, which will be the very last game of the season, April 18th. So, yeah, it was good, man. It was packed in there. It was like 4,500 people in there. It was South Asian Day. The vibes was crazy, man. It was fun to be able to be a fan. I got to just chill for most of the game, but it was good to be down there. How about you?
Love it. I know it's a bit of business and pleasure, wouldn't it, mate? You got to take the family down there as well and have some London.
Well, that was the negotiation, right? I said, babe, the league wants me to go down to London on a Sunday. But hey, by the way, you guys can come with me if you want. We can make a day out of it. So Saturday, that was the only way I was going to be able to go down there.
So sometimes you got to work the angles, right?
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do, man. But it was cool though. Like the kids took them around because we don't realize, like us as a country, we always, when we think of holidays, we think of going abroad somewhere warm. But like, we forget that we have London on our doorstep and there's so many cool places there to go visit and see.
Well, there you go. You became a tourist, kept the wife happy, and you got a bit of basketball. Happy so that wife, that beats anybody else's weekend. So let's get into this. We have been geeking out about getting to this one. Let's get our guests into the room. Welcome to the show, Ryan Smith. Welcome to the show, Coach. Long time no see.
Good to see you guys.
Yes, sir.
Well, before we get into the main body of this interview, we're going to warm you up with a quick fire round. So I will give you a question. You have to answer with one word. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. Coach is playing the Marriott Minute. Let's start with the British Basketball League.
Exciting.
The Copperbox Arena.
Ruckus.
The London Lions.
One word. Champions.
Favorite opposition venue from last season?
Leicester.
Josh Sharma.
Freak.
Jordan Taylor.
Hilarious.
Sam Decker.
Elite.
Atlanta Hawks.
Home.
Most important thing to have on you as a coach?
Phone.
Game days, suit or athleisure?
Suit.
And finally, Coach Ryan Smith.
That's the toughest one you asked, but happy.
And that's this week's Marriott Minute. Great job, Coach. They look like he practiced for that, don't you think?
I mean, he's a coach. What else do you expect, Jay? But man, it's great to have you here, Ryan. And you know, there's a lot of topics that we want to cover, but it's only right that we start. I was just in London yesterday, just covering them because obviously they won back-to-back titles. And although it's a new coach, it's a totally different group. A lot of your guys are there, but it's different. But how proud are you from afar to be able to see them continue to ascend, knowing that you were kind of part of establishing and building that culture that they have there?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, you know, watching them and following them throughout the season. I've caught a lot of games, stay in touch with the, you know, the players, and you know, just to see them kind of take that next step, right? Obviously, a good core group coming back from last year's team. You know, Brett and Yasin did a remarkable job of adding and filling in some pieces to kind of help elevate, you know, and take them to the next level. And I think you saw that, especially in Europe, in the Euro Cup. But it's been a lot of fun, right? I think just being able to, that was the thing I talked about continuously last year, was just the excitement of building something, right? And trying to, you know, the project that 777 and you know, Brett and these guys, they had the vision of where they wanted this to be, and to kind of lay the groundwork for it. I really enjoyed that process, and that's also what made it really tough to leave, you know, and during the summer, just knowing what we had coming back, knowing the players that were coming in. You know, I knew we would have a really good group, and I was excited to coach them. But obviously, it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And but yeah, I've stayed in touch with them. I watched all the games, watched the game yesterday. It's been pretty cool, actually, with like what the league has done, you know, being able to broadcast some games in the U.S., you know, here in Atlanta, Bally Sports, you turn on the TV at 3 o'clock in the afternoon sometimes, and there's a British Basketball League game on. So it's been fun to not just follow London, but just to continue to follow the league as well.
Yeah, I mean, let's just continue on that trend a little bit, like in terms of the accessibility to watch the games this season. What did you make of obviously the trophy final and, you know, everything that was set up around that month? You know, so it wasn't just about, you know, what we classify, I think, as a shock loss, really, that Cheshire came in there and were able to do that to London. But what did you think about the repackaging of that trophy in particular?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I think, too, especially with, you know, speaking from when being on the London side, like there's just so many games throughout the year, right? You know, you're playing, you know, when you have the cup and the trophy and you've got Euro Cup plus the regular season, the championship. I mean, those games start to pile up really quickly. I like the idea that they just put it into one, you know, got rid of the cup, you know, kept the trophy. And yeah, I actually got a chance to watch the game, and I just, you know, watching it, you remember the feelings of this, like every single night you're getting everybody's best shot, right? And it's like, no matter what, if it was in November, you know, if it's Friday or Saturday and you're playing, you know, up at Newcastle, if you're home against Leicester or Plymouth, it doesn't, like everybody that comes in against London, like you're going to get their best shot. And then you add, you know, the magnitude of a final, you know, it's just, and just watching it, and, you know, credit to Cheshire, like they played a heck of a game, you know, that it was exciting. It was exciting watching it, obviously pulling for London. But just the game from start to finish, was something that you got the drama. That's for sure.
Yeah. Ironically, I asked Sam that last night in an interview, and just give us some perspective, because you've been in those same exact shoes. How do you, as a coach, prepare a team, which you just spoke on, it's a very long season, but how do you prepare a team for, you know, every single night you're going to get the best shot?
I think just acknowledging it early on, right? I think you just got to, and, you know, for me, it was always just, you have to have a foundation, you know, as far as what, you know, you're always going to be able to fall back on, you know, in tight games, championship games. You know, for us last year, it was defense, you know, like just kind of trying to have that identity of being tough nose and just competing for 40 minutes, you know, obviously. And then I think once the league got going, and I think once you start playing some of the games, these guys realize really quickly, like, that there's talent on all these teams, right? And then the teams are really well coached, they're well prepared. And then obviously acknowledging and not shying away from the fact, like, this is an opportunity for these other teams, right? Like, and you think that's, you look at the British Basketball League in the past and where some of the players have, you know, what they've done in the league and then where they've gone on to play afterwards. And it's like these players are looking for a time. Okay, you have London on the schedule. You know their agents are telling them, like, if you can play well against this team, like, this is good film, right? We can send it to these other countries. And so I think just to understand, like, there is a target on your back. You know, acknowledge it, you know, have fun with it, right? But understand, like, these guys are coming after you. And just because, you know, we have certain players on the team and you've got London across your chest, like, it doesn't mean anything as soon as the ball's tipped. You still have to go compete, you have to execute, and you have to win the game. But, you know, we enjoyed it. I enjoyed it last year. I know the guys enjoy it this year. Just talking to them, like, I think there's a sense of pride you take in that. And then I think just, you know, I know last year the thing, one of my favorite things about that group was just like how they approached every single game, right? You know, we took some losses, but it wasn't, I never felt like it wasn't because we just didn't show up, right? We just might not have had it that night. But they wore that with a badge of honor, and you can tell that they do the same thing this year.
No, I love that. We go to the College Park Skyhawks. So for people that don't understand that, that is the Atlanta Hawks G League. Obviously, I think you know you've talked about this a lot with the London Lions. You know, you were sold on the culture. You wanted to come in and build a piece. You get an unbelievable offer like this. Like, how hard was it, you know, in terms of when the offer came in? You know, was there so much to think about, or was it just so undeniably good that you had to take it?
It was really hard to think about. It was by far the hardest decision I've had to make, in my professional career.
I cried, Ryan. I cried. You know, it was. I was looking forward to the second season. I wanted to see some more practices. You left me. You know.
I'm sorry. No, it's. If you can ask my wife, like I was struggling with it. You know, we had. Basically, like when we got the offer came in. I was down at Summer League. You know, they had asked to meet with me. And at first it was interesting. Like I told them no, right? When the offer first came in, or not the offer, but just like to ask them, gauge my interest. I just told them that I was, I was in a good spot. Wasn't really looking to leave. And, Coach Snyder personally just reached out to me and asked if we could at least have a meeting, conversation, in Las Vegas. I was going to be there with Brett and Yasin as we were still scouting, trying to finish up our roster. And then it just, the more I talk with them, the other thing a lot of people don't know is that the same thing happened with Golden State. Golden State reached out. They actually offered me their G League job, which I turned down. And just meeting with Atlanta, meeting with Quinn, Landry Fields is a GM, Kyle Korver is the assistant GM. Just hearing kind of their overall vision and plan, like it's obviously a brand new regime. Quinn came in to finish last season. It was on a 5-year contract, new general manager. And it was exciting just to hear kind of what they wanted to do and how they wanted to utilize College Park, how that implementing that and what that looked like as far as the development of a lot of their younger players. For me personally, a lot of it had to do with the dual role, right? Being a full-time assistant with the Hawks. I'm on the bench for home games when we're both in town. Quinn and I work extremely close together. That was probably the biggest thing for me was just, in my career, like I had, was a high school head coach at 28 years old, did that for 4 years, was fortunate to go to Toronto, work in the G League, but all the coaches I worked with, they were all former, assistants that were having that was their first head coaching opportunity. And so this was really an opportunity for me to learn under someone, like Quinn Snyder, right? And to see someone that I've studied and admired from afar for a really long time. And then just to get a chance to work with him, personally up close and just kind of see, his process and be involved in that as well. Was something that was just going to be hard to turn down. But like as I kept going through the process of my own, it's just leaving London. Like I just couldn't get there. Right? As exciting as the opportunity was, I love what we were building in London. Obviously I've said it before. Brett and I go back. We've been friends for 12, 13 years. Be a head coach and to work with a general manager that you consider a friend, like that's a rare opportunity, right? And so I think it was fun doing that with him. And then to walk away after like my first year as a head coach and, playing in Euro Cup, knowing what you had coming back, that's not easy, right? And I think it takes something special to pull you away from that. But even after I made the decision, like my wife, I was for 3-4 days, like I was a mess. Like I just, you feel bad. There's guilt. There's, are you going to regret this decision? Are you leaving too soon? But at the end of the day, like I know it was the best thing for my family and I, and we're happy and excited to be in Atlanta.
Yeah, this is so fascinating because I've never shared this on the podcast. I don't even know if I shared it with you, Jay, but just listening to you, Ryan, because I was right in the middle of it all. Because during Summer League, I run into you, Brett, and OG one late night in Vegas, and we're talking about next season, the London Lions, and then boom, a couple days later, this news breaks. But my question is how did the Warriors, how did the Hawks know about you?
Yeah, so Giamma Malalela was the assistant, so the coach I worked for when I was with the Raptors 905, Toronto's G League team, and Giamma was an assistant with Golden State for the previous 2 years, so when they had their G League open, head coaching job open up, he put my name in the hat for that. They reached out. Obviously, it's the Golden State Warriors. Like it was, it's one of the premier organizations in the NBA. And it was exciting just even just going through the process and getting a chance to talk to them and learn more about what that looked like, that job entitled, and what the role looked like. But then I just say, like, then the Atlanta was just different. Like, it just kind of felt different with, I think just my involvement and what, again, the complete integration, the collaboration. A lot of people talk about those things and they use those words, but when you actually get to it, it just doesn't really exist. And, I tell people all the time, like, everything that was kind of you know, mentioned and brought up in the discussions with the Hawks, you know, it's exceeded my expectations, really. So, you know, I have a friend of mine, Brittany Donaldson, who we worked together in Toronto also. Quinn had hired her as an assistant. And so when this whole thing kind of opened up, she, you know, told Quinn, like, I think you should talk to Ryan. And he knew, Quinn and I had talked last year a little bit. So he knew my situation in London. And he, you know, as I said, he's like, obviously the timing might not be, you know, might not be the time to do it now. Like, I know you're in a good spot, but we'd at least like to talk to you and sit down and discuss some things. So it was fun. Like, I met, you know, when I met with him in Vegas, you know, I told Whitney, my wife, I said, you know, we've got to make a decision before I go speak with him. Like, is this the right thing to do? I said, because there's no way I'm going to go meet with Quinn Snyder for 2 hours and walk out of there and be like, okay, this doesn't make sense for me to do. So
that's funny. That's awesome. Well, I mean, yeah, I really enjoyed Quinn's teams. Like, when I lived in Utah, like, I was working in a high school game, we got to know George Hill really well, just as he got traded to the Utah. So got to watch them a ton. And it's really fascinating. I want to deep dive a little bit with you. So on the socials, obviously the big news for Atlanta Hawks is Kobe Bufkin moving up from the Skyhawks. And my question to you is, how does that whole process happen? Because obviously, as a coach in the G League, you're trying to build a winning habit, build a winning culture within that team. But also as well, your job is there to develop players to then move into the NBA. And I'm sure that you would love to keep Kobe on your team, you know, but it's time for him to move up to Atlanta. And obviously Quinn heaped praise on your ability to transfer his game to him, being able to handle the ball a lot more. So talk to us a little bit about that transition, so fans can understand exactly what your role is, more than just winning games.
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge part of taking this job, was they, you know, just where they're at with the roster. Kobe Bufkin was their first round draft pick this past summer. Mo Gay, who was another draft pick they had, they've got really high hopes on. And he unfortunately was dealing with some injuries early in the year, but we have him now. Like, he's going to play with us. He played one game already. He will probably play to finish out the season with us as well. So those two in particular were really, you know, two young players. Both of them were 20, you know, that, you know, they're wanting to get game reps, right? Sometimes, obviously, in the NBA, once the season gets going, if you're kind of out of the rotation, you know, you're not getting a lot of reps, right? You're the opportunity to develop outside of, you know, getting in individual workouts and maybe some player development sessions with some of the assistants and the other low minute guys or guys aren't in the rotation. But there's nothing that can replicate getting in a game, right? Having the pressure of making reads, making decisions, having to guard other, you know, players. Being able to navigate all those things, that you just can't replicate that. And so just knowing that was a big part of what, you know, they wanted to do. And it's also, it's a big part of what a lot of these NBA teams are doing now. Even, you know, when I left the Toronto, being with their G League team for 4 years, you know, I left to go to London. Even in those 2 years I was away, coming back, like, the G League has grown significantly. Like, right? The level of talent, you know, is higher, deeper, I should say. There's always, like, talented players. Like, you know, you get some top-heavy teams. But, like, I mean, you look at guys now in the G League, like, these, you got some teams that when they're either injured or maybe their two-way and assignment players aren't there, you've got, like, the quote-unquote eighth or ninth man on a G League roster. He goes in a game, he scores 25 points. So with Kobe, it was more just, again, he was a combo guard at Michigan, right? So he didn't play the point guard. That's not his natural position, but, like, they see him being an NBA point guard, 6'4", 6'5". So, again, you're trying to help develop, you know, a 20-year-old, you know, player into an NBA point guard. It's not an easy thing to do, right? It's probably the toughest position to play. And again, just where we kind of, like, philosophically aligned with, you know, how things should be done. Like, when I met with, you know, the front office and met with Quinn in the summer, you know, I just told him, like, I always put a premium on defense. Like, I think if you're a young player and you want to get on the floor, you know, defense is, it's worldwide, right? You can play in London, you can play in the NBA, you can play, like, if you can defend, you know, there's a spot for you to play. And, you know, and obviously from a skill offensive side, you know, being a point guard, it's going to be come down to, are you able to run a team, right? Can you control a game? Do you understand clock management? Do you understand how to get other guys involved, right? Do you understand, you know, all these situational things that you have to get in game experience? And to Kobe's credit, I tell people all the time, he came to College Park with an unbelievable mindset, right? Embrace the being on assignment, embrace the challenge. I understood what he needed to do. And you know, I was able to coach him hard, right? I just be tough and like understand, like, no, you have to defend. Like, this is non-negotiable. This is what you have to do. And then, you know, on the offensive side, just him being able to, you know, learn how to handle pressure. Because again, what a lot of people don't know, you know, about the G League, if you're a first round draft pick and you're a 20-year-old, you know, young man, you know, a lot of these guys look at them as kids. If you're on assignment, the 25, 26-year-old guy who's been in and out of the NBA, when you come into town to play him and that's your matchup, like, he's salivating. Like, he knows it's an opportunity for him, right? Kind of going back to, like, we talked about with London last year and even this year. Like, when these teams have opportunities to play against big-name players or big-name teams, like, they're not taking you lightly. Like, they're going to give you everything they got. So that was good for him just because he – every time he stepped on the floor, like, he's playing against guards that were either young and hungry and like, okay, this is an NBA rookie first round draft pick, or he's playing against like a more of a veteran guy that, you know, takes a lot of pride in, like, you're not getting off on me tonight, young man. So, but it was fun just watching his growth. And then the thing that was really fun to see was because it wasn't about scoring 30 or 40, right? I think he had a couple big scoring games, but it was all about, like I talked about, the marginal things, right? Like being able to defend, do the little things, taking charges, diving on the floor for loose balls, like do the things that other players aren't willing to do. That's what's going to get you minutes for Coach Snyder. That's what's going to keep you on the floor when you do get the opportunity to go up. You know, fast forward to, you know, I guess after he played 15 games with us. And then after that, you know, fortunately, Trey, you know, has an injury to his finger, but it creates opportunity for Kobe. So Quinn calls him up. And his first game in just defensively was, you know, incredible, right? Just, you know, into the ball, picking up, you know, I think he took two charges. And then there's the second game, took another charge. There was a loose ball on the floor. He dives on it and almost maybe shed a tear. You know, it's just doing all these little things that we talked about, right? The film sessions and the one-on-one conversations and just him being fully bought into understanding, like, okay, like, this is what I need to do, right? And then, you know, once you're able to get minutes, like, then, okay, if it's 10 minutes on the floor, doing those things is going to take 10 and turn it into 15, right? 15, and then eventually your role is going to grow, right? Especially on the offensive side. But it's been a lot of fun, like, just how it's – and then, again, it's so rewarding, right? You see all the time and effort you're putting in, you know, with these players and what the players are doing, and then to see it translate at the NBA level, you know, it's been a lot of fun.
And so you get the opportunity to sit on the bench during home games. NBA is what I'm speaking of, and you're involved in practices as well. Just paint the picture for our fans, because obviously they look at London and it's like the best thing that they've ever seen from a talent perspective in this country. It's mentioned pretty often. But give us the difference between that level and the NBA. So, for example, a Jordan Taylor and a Trae Young, or Tariq Phillip and a Jadonte Murray, respectfully, obviously. But what's the difference between a Euro Cup top league team like London and these NBA guys?
Yeah, I mean, Jordan and Tariq, those are my guys. So I can, I mean, they, I love those guys. But yeah, it's. Honestly, I think, Drew, you know, you and I connected a few different times throughout the year, just, you know, social media. And I think the number one thing that stands out to me, like being around the NBA guy, is just it's the size, athleticism. Right. I think you look at some of the guys, some of these guys, like I'll never forget when we being with the Hawks early. And then once our G League season started, right, then I think we did our training camp. We might have played one or two games. And so I was away from the Hawks for maybe 2 weeks. And then the best way to kind of put this, I guess, paint the picture for is you guys are asking is, and then we come back and we have a home game. The Hawks have a home game against the New York Knicks. So you play, we have two G League games, and then you play, and then you see the New York Knicks at home. I'm on the bench, and you're looking at Jalen Brunson, Quentin Grimes, RJ Barrett, Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson. Like, these guys are massive, like, and they're freaks athletically, like their ability to move and defend. And then also too, just I think with the guard stuff, you know, it's these, you know, every player is different obviously, but I think just, you know, the game is so slow to some of these, you know, these high level players. You know, I was on the bench when Lucas scored, I think it was 73 against us. I've never seen anything like that. Like, it's like, I've never, and just to see like how he did it, like the game was literally like in slow motion to him. right? And it's just you. We threw different coverages at him. You throw, you know, different matchups. Like, it didn't matter. Like, he just almost kind of like shrugs it off. And like, you look up, he had 41 at halftime. And it's just the, but it was the way he was doing it. Like, it's, you know, it almost looks effortless, right? I think just the game is, it's just slow motion. Their skill level is just next level. And you just, you know, as a coach, as a basketball fan, you just have such an appreciation for it, right? Because, you know, I'm being honest, and I'm not just being biased. Like, you know, the Jordan Taylors and Tariq Phillips, the Sam Deckers, like, these guys aren't slouches. These guys are really, really good pros. It's just, and then being, you see at the NBA level, it's just, these guys are, they're the 1%, right? It's just the, you know, the guys, and so seeing that up close, it's, you know, it's been a lot of fun, and it just gives you a whole another level of appreciation for their talent.
Man, love that. I know we haven't got you for much longer, so I just want to change tact a little bit and talk about the Canadian League. Obviously, you spent time with the Hamilton Honey Badgers, and this season seems to be a real deep connection between the British Basketball League and CBL. We've seen Teddy Allen, Kimball McKenzie, Boucher's been there as well. I'm forgetting somebody else as well who's come in from that league. We saw Whelan was in that league as well. It really looks like it's a league to pay attention to for British basketball, especially to go recruitment. Just give us a little breakdown of that league. I know it's obviously condensed, so for fans, you know, it's a lot shorter. It's a 3-month season, similar maybe to the Australian off-season league as well. Just give us a little breakdown of the Canadian league and whether you think it can be a nice little recruitment ground for some of these clubs.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely, I do. I think just the level of play, you know, the first year I did it, so I did it for 3 summers, you know, in a row. And just, again, it's one of those leagues where you see just kind of like the British Basketball League, right? It just kind of continues to grow. You see the level of talent continue to increase year to year. It's been fun. Like, obviously, just, you know, seeing, you know, I think the connection between the CBL and the BBL. Just because it's, again, like the familiarity of the players, I think it's a similar league from a style of play, right, to where I think that kind of helps the players. You know, you see, you know, like Mason, I think, is playing with Manchester. I was a huge fan of him. He was one of the players where he was playing still as a university student, you know, the first couple of years. And then, you know, yeah, we had, like, Aaron Best was with me in Canada and came over with me to London. But I'm a huge advocate for it. Obviously, for me, it was a huge, you know, a huge part of my career that if I didn't coach in that league for 3 summers and be able to kind of cut my teeth and learn and try different things out and, you know, get those game reps, like, I'm not ready to take the London job, right? And that's, to me, it's like, I feel like it's the same thing with players. It's just an opportunity to compete and develop and just get more reps. You know, it's from a competitive standpoint, like, you keep talking about opportunities. You're playing against good players every single night, so it's an opportunity for you to get good film. I think the league has grown to a point now where it's, you know, respected worldwide. So I think now it carries a lot more weight than maybe it did 3 or 4 years ago if you're a player. But it's been a lot of fun for me to see the growth of it. Like, there's some talk, like, they're going to continue to expand, I think. And I think they just kind of found their niche, right? I don't think they're trying to do their, you know, having it in the summertime. You know, it's a very player-friendly league because, you know, there's guys where if you have opportunities to go, you know, if there's an NBA team that wants you to play with them for summer league, like, they don't hold you back from doing it. Like, you're not bound to a contract where you can't go do it, right? The salaries are on a per-game basis. So, you know, sometimes also it makes it tough from a coaching standpoint. You might lose some players here and there, but I think that's all part of the development, right? Trying to figure out how to win. You know, you might have a certain roster on a Thursday night, and then times you get to Sunday, the roster changes, which is very, very similar to the G League. So it helped prepare me for what we're doing now. But yeah, big, big fan of the CBL. Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity there, and it's anyone that can be a part of it, whether you're player, coach, I definitely highly recommend it.
And finally, just to bring things back to the British Basketball League, you've been in it, you're on the outside looking in, you get to catch up with it on Bally Sports now. What's next for the British Basketball League to continuing to traject forward? What do you see that we can continue to get better in and move this thing forward?
Honestly, just think, just everything this year, man. Like, you look at the broadcast stuff, right? You look at multiple teams now playing in Europe. You see the level of talent, the players that are signing into the league. I think now it's just about just consistently continuing to do that, right? I think anything to have success, it can't be a one-off or 2 years. And I just think just to continue to have consistency, right? I think just being able to see all the teams, like I've caught a couple of Bristol's games and Newcastle's games in Europe. That's exciting, right? To be able to see like where that's just not just London. And I know like just being there last year, it was the cool part about it was like on Tuesday or Wednesday nights, you would have the whole British Basketball League support London, right? And then, then all of a sudden you go to Plymouth on Friday and you're getting cussed out, which was, which made it fun, right? But like for one night during the week, you had a lot of people that were, cheering you on, and you're carrying the flag for British basketball, and to see that expand now and have multiple teams playing in Europe, I thought has been tremendous. And some of the players that are signing in and just watching some of the games, like I just think to me it's continuing just to keep that consistency. I think it's the British Basketball League. Like people ask me about it all the time here, and and around the G League and the NBA, so it's the, I think the headlines and the fanfare, I guess you would say, it's growing, right? And I think now to kind of to be able to keep it at that level, it's consistency. So I'm excited. It's been a lot of fun to watch it. I'm really excited for London's playoff game this week. We
Yeah.
scheduled I scheduled the day off for that one, so I'm looking forward to it.
Man, incredible. Well, look, I think we've held you directly to 30 minutes, which is all we had with you. So I could have gone for another couple of hours, but you got a big boy job. It's great to see yet another connection with the NBA for the British Basketball League. And the
Yes.
better you do, the more it's going to fly the flag for the league, and people are going to turn their
Yep.
eyes and go, hey, if Coach Schmidt can go there, then it could be an opportunity for me too. But great to catch up with you. Good luck for the rest of the season and the playoffs of the NBA too.
Yeah,
I
thanks for your
appreciate it,
time,
guys.
Coach.
Yeah,
Thanks,
thank you guys.
Coach.
It's been
Thanks,
great
man.
seeing you.
Appreciate you.
Likewise.
All right.
Cool as a cucumber. How dope was that, man? I think we could have just dedicated the whole show to Coach Smith, but he had bigger and better things to do.
Well, we'll have to get him back again, that's for sure. And my favorite podcast, is the JJ Redick one, and he always says basketball sickos, and he's one of those guys. He just loves it. And just hearing some breakdown about the NBA as well as the British Basketball League was very fun.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. It's motivating to see that you could be here in a little old British basketball league and you can go do bigger and better things. Shout out to him, Chris Finch, Fab, Tosun, everybody that's representing the league. And they're all representing us well, Jay. That's for sure. But we got to move things along to Hot Topics brought to you by SoFab Sports. And we got to start in Bristol, Jay. I mean, they've lost five in a row. They're 3-9 since December 14th. You talked a little bit about their lack of depth, which has hurt them in the British Basketball League as they're balancing Europe. But I mean, how concerned should we be about this Bristol Flyers team as we hit this final stretch of the season?
Well, I think it goes way back to the start of the season. When we started the podcast and I talked about how upset I was, when I heard that they were going into Europe, I got really excited, and I thought that that guarantees that they're going to bring all their guys back, they're going to tool up, and they're going to add exactly what you just said there, depth. Because that was the one thing that was missing from last season, that they needed depth. And if you're going to take Europe on as well, then you definitely need depth. But, once again, this ended up being a really thin roster. That didn't come to fruition at the start. And a lot of people were like, oh, like they haven't missed a beat. And, the culture from last season has stayed within them and stuff like that. And I just think that what we're watching now is that schedule. And especially having such a really good run, let's not get totally down on them. They've had a great run in Europe. That's finally starting to catch up with them, and it's starting to translate into tired bodies and really tired performances. And when you were watching them at the start of the year, where they were really up and after teams, not so much now, especially when you're going in the downward stretch of a game when you're watching them. So, there has to be a concern there, but at the same time, it seems very much they're focused on Europe. I think maybe Coach Andreas has looked at the league and thought, hey, what do we do here? Like, what are we actually doing? Whereas in Europe, you know, there could be something really special on the line. They could go real deep. So I think it's just one of those things of a really thin roster, and hopefully whether the finances is connected to the new stadium or whatever happens as they move forward, they just need that bit of depth. I think if they could have had some of those additions this year and kept the majority of their squad, then they would have been set up to deal with it this year. So just a bit too thin, I think.
Yeah, you say depth, but I'm confused what you mean by that, because I don't see it that way. I just see it as it's very black and white to me. They just don't have as much talent as they did last year. When you think about it, they haven't replaced VJ King. I mean, look at that roster. Who can fill in the boots of him? No one. Maybe they upgraded from the point guard position in Green, but they lose a little bit of experience, where I think it's hurt them. But then also, they lose one of the best Brits in the league. And
Watson Gale, yeah.
Yeah, and Jelani Watson Gale. So for me, I just see it those two pieces, that Jelani Watson Gale was their best fourth quarter player, not only for the Flyers, but for the league. Probably if there was a Brit of the Year award, would he have won that? I'm pretty sure, if he would have come very close. And VJ King was runner up to Sam Dekker in MVP, that which was very controversial, which many people thought he should have won it over Sam due to lack of games. But I mean, because you talk about lack of depth, when I look at them compared to Newcastle, they're 8 and 9 deep the same. I mean, you got your six Americans, you got Brad Green, you got Trajan Jacob, you got Tijan Lucas, you got Tevin Ollison, you got Keedy Johnson, and you got the big fella, Brad Green. So they've met their criteria in Americans. From the Brit standpoint, they brought in Rafael Thomas Edwards, who you would say is an addition to last year's team. Corey Samuels is still there. And they brought in Royal Graham-Bell, who obviously is out with an ankle injury now. So I don't really see it as lack of depth. I just see it as not as talented as last year. And the league has gotten better this year.
Mm. I mean, give them a little bit of credit as well on the injury front. They've been really unfortunate.
Yeah,
if you're going to be thin, you have to be healthy, you know. And I think definitely, like from the games that I've gone down and watched them live this season, like you know, Roel was a massive piece for them, like just an animal in terms of you know, that extra body rebounding. You're right that Roel and Rafael should have been additions, not subtraction. So they should have found a way to keep hold of Watson Gale. That would have been really, you know, that would have been really exciting there. That would have been three British pieces that you can add. Mm-hmm. You know, instead, it's a big ask for Corey Samuels to try and step into Watson Gale's shoes. You know, he's not a shooter, you know, and he's a big energy guy, but that's not going to be something you need in the fourth quarter. As you said, like Jelani was pretty ice in his veins, and he did that in Seabull as well. So like when he moved up to the Canadian League, he was big time in fourth quarters. So that wasn't just luck. So yeah, I just think they're suffering a little bit. Maybe it's all a learning curve, right? I think they'll get to the end of the season and hopefully they're going to go for Europe again, and they go, okay, here are the things that we're missing. You know, but I think Lucas being out for like a long period of time, like he really runs the show with that team, and that allows, you know, players like Ollison to get off to the races, and instead he maybe has to be on the ball a little bit more, getting a little bit more tired on pick and rolls. I just think a little bit too thin for me.
Yeah, you know, they have been very unfortunate. I mean, Leslie Smith is out right now, which I think a fractured hand. Keedy Johnson missed weeks with the fractured wrist. Tajan Lucas was out 6 weeks with a hamstring. And then Tevin Ollison missed last week's game. He was out a couple games with an ankle. And I think you're right, Jay. I think because Corey Samuels has had to start many games this year, that's a downgrade when you think about inserting Corey Samuels and you think about Watson Gale. And Corey, like you mentioned, is a great young player, but I just don't think he's at that level just yet to be a you know, definitely not a starter in the British Basketball League, but to be an impact piece for a winning team in the league. And so that takes time. And so, again, for me, it just comes down to lack of talent, or lacker talent than last year. But, it's going to get tougher for these guys. They got Leicester Riders next. Then they got the Cheshire Phoenix. So they could be seven in a row here. And but the whole crazy thing I love of it, the irony of it, Jay, is that the Bristol Flyers are now in eighth place. Boy, that preseason prediction would have worked perfectly for me last year. And guess who's seventh? The little old Surrey Scorchers.
Little old Surrey.
The little old, and check this out. Thursday night, they play another reeling team, the Sheffield Sharks. And if Surrey win this game, guess where they go up to, Jay?
The place I told them to reach for.
Sixth place.
What I'm hoping from this, though, is what I'm really hoping is don't tweet me on the games that we already know you can win. Like, you don't tweet me after the Bristol game. That's not going to spite me. That's gonna lead me on. You've got to get me with a Caledonia and a Leicester Riders and then just pie me in the face, right? You've got to come at me and get me with a custard pie. But I'm like, this is the point that I've made already. These are the teams you're beating, you know?
And to give the people perspective out there, Jay tweeted, which I had a nice giggle at. He says, you can't pick on the Flyers forever. And we're talking about a team that's playing in Europe, but the Surrey Scorchers have swept the Bristol Flyers 4-0. I can't remember the last time they swept a team in the league. So yes, that great is job. Progress. Yeah, great job. But again, here we are again. How many times have we been here on the show and we say, this is a chance, this is an opportunity, and Surrey falls flat on their face? Well, I'm going to give you your eighth chance this year. You got Sheffield, who isn't playing well at all. They showed it again on Sunday, that the Jekyll and Hyde. Thursday, they beat a Plymouth team, but I think it's fair to say that was more to do about Plymouth than that was about them. And you have an opportunity to come and snatch six and make Jay Marriott a proud little lad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a win-win situation for me, right? If you hit sixth, I've told you to go for sixth. If you lose, I'm going to come for you anyway. So, I mean, you're putting yourself in a difficult position. I think, though, like, we've got to look at it a different way. Like, I would love to know. So, I don't know the answer. So, this isn't me being a smart ass for once, right? I don't know the answer. But I'm going to guess that Cheshire's budget is very similar to a Surrey budget.
I would assume that. Yeah.
So when you're saying where I'm setting the bar is, I'm setting the bar at somebody that's looked at it completely different and switched it on its head and gone, I'm coming for London's throat. I'm coming for everybody. And he's moneyballed everybody. I talked about it before with Coach Ben Thomas. So, you know, I'm kind of hoping that a lot of teams are going to learn from this by the end of the season, because kudos to Cheshire. You know, that, like I said, there's some, you know, defining teams that have changed the way the league plays. And I think that Cheshire is one of them, for many different reasons and many different pieces that they put together. But, you know, that has to go the kudos to coach. Just to take a real bite out of the Sheffield Sharks, I don't know how they kind of solve this right now. You know, I was listening to that interview that you did with Coach Atiba afterwards, and you know, he's still searching for the answer. You know, like, he was very honest in his interview. You know, he's a defense first coach. I don't think that that's necessarily the problem. I don't think people are not bought into playing defensively, but they just cannot seem to get a tune out of the collective group. And it's really strange, because at times in the games that they end up losing, they look great. You know, I remember how fast they came out of the gates against Leicester, and I was like, "Woo, this is a new look team that looks like, you know, coach has taken the lead off and said, go get them." Looked amazing, and then they just kind of run out of gas and just don't seem to be able to get there. So I don't know what the answer is, but it's a shame, because at the start of the year they had the new arena and there was a lot of hype, and I talked them up as well, because I was like, hey, what is more consistent in the British Basketball League than the Sheffield Sharks? And then what do they do to me? Oh, I can't believe it.
I think your analogy, you said let the lead off. You should have said unreel the fishing rod, according to the Cheshire Phoenix, who tweeted before the game, let's go catch us a fish. And you know I had to jump in. And I was like, Sheffield Sharks, you're going to take that? I retweeted it just to make sure they saw that, the players saw that. Because they are called the they're not called the tadpoles, are they? They're not called the salmon, are they? They're called the sharks. So, you know, I'm going in that locker room saying, giving some kind of hoorah speech, saying these mofos then called us a fish, and they lost anyway. But I think the issue is, Jay, is that because, yeah, you're right. I asked Atiba, was he more proud of the 97 points put up against Plymouth or the 64 points given up? And he said, obviously, you know who, you know me. I'm always happy about defense. And although they're still top two in defense in the league, they've had some slippage as of late. I think the issue is they put too much pressure on their defense, because you mentioned it just now about how the league has changed. Everyone has this spread out offense. They're launching up threes. And I look at it like this. No matter how good your defense is, offensively, you must score more than 80 points to win, because the players in this league are too good to hold them to 65 points a game. It's too many possessions. It's too many three-pointers being launched. And so I'm looking at that team on Thursday night, and I'm thinking, how does this team average 70 points? You go down the list. They have so much talent. And I just honestly think, and we've talked about this before, I just think it's Atiba still tinkering with it, trying to figure out which combinations work, because they do have so much talent. And this is why.
Too many guys, though, take tough twos. Too many guys. There's too many guys there that settle for tough twos. And analytically, you're going to get your ass killed if you keep taking tough twos. When they're going, they look like the first half of Leicester Riders. When they're not going, like you said, pressure is wholeheartedly on the defense. It's tough.
Yeah, no, it is. I agree with that. They do take a lot of twos. I mean, I actually, during the Plymouth game, I was asking a couple people because going into the fourth quarter, they had made eight threes. And I was like, this is un-Sheffield Shark light, because I think they averaged eight makes a game. And so I had to ask around to figure out what was the season high in makes. And it was 12 and they made 11. But I just think, like, it's not even the point of making them consistently. You got to take them consistently. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would be shocked if they took more than 23s a game. I think you got to get up, you know, 20 to 25 just to give yourself a chance.
But who are the snipers on that team? You know what I mean? Like they have real creativity. They have real creativity. I thought Rutino was going to be one of the best shooters in the league, but he struggled the last couple of seasons now, hasn't it? It's just not been there. You know, they went back to Kipper Nichols, you know, like has that paid dividends for them? Like defensively it does, definitely. But offensively, you know, he's a glue guy. And then you've got a lot of guards that can really put the ball down on the floor, you know, like, and they've got real pedigree, but, you know, they're just mid-range or get into the bucket. You know, if you go under screens on them and force them into tough threes and then pressures on the defense. I mean, I don't know what the solutions are, but it just seems to me analytically they're playing themselves out of the game.
Yeah, I think it's one of those teams that Monday through Thursday at practices, it's like the Super Bowl. It's guys going at each other. It's tough. It's entertainment because you got 10 guys who are very similar. But then they get in front of the bright lights and you're playing a team like Cheshire who's launching up 43s of Surrey, and you kind of get exposed. But it's I can't put my finger on it, but your consistent Sharks look like they might be finishing outside of the top six for the first time.
Unusual.
Yeah.
I'm not happy. Unusual. They were like they're like comfy slippers that don't fit anymore. I got to get rid of them. I used to love the consistent conversation. I'm not sure the Sharks fans loved it, but I loved it. Now I can't. What do I got to do? Got to get a new pair of slippers.
Are they the slippers that you put on as soon as you enter your home? Are they the ones that you have that you can walk on the carpet on in the living room?
Ooh, wow. You know, that's a whole level of conversation. That's like more like London Lion slippers. They are. You wear them when you're the proud house owner, you know? Look at me.
Don't you wear those shoes on my carpet. Oh, man, that's good stuff. I mean, well, let's transfer. Let's get off the Sharks back for a little bit. We haven't talked about the Eagles in a while. They was off the schedule this week. I had a chance to watch them in Europe. Ricky McGill named MVP of the ENBL. I mean, that's got to be huge, right? For us to enter a European competition and have a player from our league win the MVP.
Yeah, massive. I mean, that's unbelievable. But then also as well, one thing that I did notice on the socials is I didn't realize just how much it meant to Ricky McGill himself. You know, like it very much feels like after Plymouth was tough for him, you know, to try and figure out where he could showcase his talents. And
did you know he tore his ACL?
Yeah, yeah. So I knew he was coming back from an injury. And, you
know,
you know, like that just takes forever, you know, and like that messes with your mental, you know, massively, you know. So for him to come back and make the impact that he has, he's been one of the best players in our league, that's for sure. And in Europe, you know, we've talked about stylistically how things match up. Like he's really used that to his advantage and looked unbelievable. You know, he's been consistently and easily the best player on that Eagles team all season long, you know, despite the star power that he's got around him. And maybe even, I think, when he got announced, I feel like he was a little bit overlooked in a way. You know, like we knew how good he was coming from Plymouth, and that was quite exciting. But I think everyone was like, you know, Larry moving from Cheshire was big. Green moving from Manchester was big. Johnson moving from coming back after a season away from Caledonia was big. I think he got kind of overlooked.
And, just recency bias, that's all. Because if you think about it, those other guys.
Yeah, just we haven't seen
most
him for
recent,
a while, yeah.
He's been gone. And also when he played, it was during the pandemic, so no fans got to see him. So that, you know, that's part of it. But
he's good.
Yeah. It was good to see him announced to the All-Star game. I mean, four guys from the Newcastle Eagles announced. Just think of four London Lions were announced, how much hoopla there would be. Because there were only three Lions, right? Decker, Morgan, and Olesini. There's no other Lions, right?
No. Yeah. No lobs to Sharma. I can't believe it. So what are we doing here? This is an All-Star game, guys.
You
make a call.
Four Eagles, and boy, if that was the London Lions, they'd be all hell would be breaking loose.
What's the rules with the coaches picking? Like they can only pick one from each team, like right? That's the rule.
Yeah, you have to. So every team has a representative. So they had to make sure that Manchester and Plymouth had a player invited in. I mean, do you like that rule?
I like that rule. But I was going to say to you, like, how are you feeling as a coach? Because you've had to choose that one guy, you know. So Gareth obviously went with Clifton. Does he walk into practice the next day and just have to not catch some of those guys' eyes? Like, what's he got to do?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, who else is next in line? I mean, I honestly believe that he had a conversation with Patrick Whelan about it, because how do you not choose Patrick Whelan? I think with Patrick Whelan got that finger injury and he made a executive decision to say, hey, I'm not bringing you to this damn All-Star game because we got bigger fish to fry. But no, I don't think there'll be any. I mean, who else would he invited?
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, would you, like, as a coach, when you go in, you feeling like super comfortable about your pick, or are you thinking, is everyone looking at me?
Well, you know Gareth Murray. You think he gives a shit?
Nah. Well, 100% not. What a bad example that is.
Terrible example.
Gareth, you got something to say?
Yeah.
No, coach.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Exactly. Gareth didn't care. Yeah. I know. I see what you mean. Just the wrong coach to use. Seriously. But I mean, finally, man, I got a chance, obviously, we spoke about it before, to watch London on Sunday. Caught me by surprise. I was not expecting to see Sam Decker out there warming up, but apparently he told me it was, you know, top secret, to be under wraps. And I'm watching his team, Jay, and I'm like, I forgot two things. I firstly forgot how damn good this team is when they're fully fit, because it's been a while. And then I forgot how big they are. I'm like, they made the Leicester Riders look like a JV squad in regards to size, physicality, athleticism. I mean, geez, with Decker in that lineup, I mean, geez.
Yeah, Decker changes everything, doesn't he? Just in time for the All-Star game, guys.
And you know what? I was thinking as he scored, you know, 7 points in the first 30 seconds. I thought, So are you guys sure you want to doubt Sam Dekker playing in the All-Star game? Because he was clearly the best player on the floor yesterday.
Well, you said it yourself, recency bias, like we've forgotten, you know, just how much of a cheat code Sam Dekker was last season. And if he had been healthy, like I wonder just how competitive the league could have possibly been. And, you know, you look at things like the trophy final and stuff like that. If you imagine Matt Morgan's got to be the Robin to Sam Dekker's Batman, yeah. Wow. Well, then all bets are off. You know, that looks incredible, doesn't it? But
yeah, you almost forget. You forget. I forgot how big he is. Like, he's legit 6'9". And yeah, I don't care if he played one game. Put him in a damn All-Star game.
Oh, he's going to play. He's going to show out. He'll wave to the fans.
Yeah, let's stop all this ruckus. I know I've been on record saying he won't play. We'll find a substitute. But after watching him, I thought, you know what? Actually, Sam Dekker, yeah, you could be the last pick. Get yourself in there, mate.
Let him have a runabout. But that's it for us, guys. Finally, it's just time for us to give that player a nickname.
Who are we rolling with?
Hooping and Looting. I am going, this week's pick is the London Lions star point guard and league analyst, Jordan Taylor.
Ooh.
Tell us what you think his nickname could possibly be. Anyway, that is me this week. Thank you, as always, for the support. If you think your brand would benefit with some love on the pod, jump in our DMs. Until then, Drew, lead us out.
Yeah, back to schedule rotation. We got this final stretch where we're off to the end of the season. Yes, the slippers that you wear on the carpet, not as you enter the houses, that part of the season. But guys, yeah, stay on this ride with us. We're going to make sure that we take you on every step of the way to the finish line. And we'll catch you guys next week, same time here on the Drew and Jay podcast. Have a great week, guys.